Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. The hell? Okay, that's bizarre. Still bizarre. Come up screaming. Come up screaming. Oh, that's a hell of a lot more like come out wondering, isn't it? Stop. What was that? Who knows? It's brand new broadcast week, broadcasting on the razor's edge of technology. We're on. It's on. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. Oh, for pity's sakes. Let's just stop that before it gets any worse. Yes, I think that's a good idea. You just stop that before it gets any worse. No, go away. It's the 11th day of April, 2016. This program is live. This program is 3 hours long. Because we're back to the regular schedule. And, of course, if you would like to join in the madcap merriment and real-time zaniness, I heartily invite you to run over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, and, well, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be you will immediately be in the presence of one of the happeningest, funniest, pleasantest, most enjoyable chat experiences to be had. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It is more and Monday on the horn. Yes. And, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah, got that part out of the way. Yay, good for you. Yes. So, I'm sorry, that just kind of threw me for a little bit when the intro doesn't do intro things. And yes. Good evening to Anatole. Good evening to Jug of Punch and Labor Man and Lady Tsuki and Soapbox Geezer, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, and more will be along presently, I trust. A gentle reminder that this is a listener-supported broadcast operation, and we've got about $300 to raise to catch up with what we didn't do at the end of last week and tonight. You know, we try to raise $200 a night, so it's 200 plus 100 equals 300. And thank you very kindly indeed to our subscribers, without whom this would have been significantly higher number. So thank you very much indeed. Like I said, it's more in Monday. And oh my God, sometimes you just go, when the morans start stacking up like cordwood, about the time that you turn off the microphone on Friday. No, and I got the Bob Kincaid part out of the way, right? I'm just making sure. Okay, good. So we kind of expect it, don't we? No, wait, I guess we should do that. Well, I don't know if I can even trust the damn music anymore. Here, let's check. Let's not give up. Let's not preemptively surrender.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Step right up, step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Time waits for no man, time waits for no woman, and a rolling stone gathers no gravy. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Just a few paces off the main midway, just a few steps away from where you were throwing the ping pong balls at the goldfish bowls and watching them bounce merrily all over creation because they're silicone-coated to make them extra bouncy and make sure they never actually go in the water and you don't win a goddamn goldfish. It's Moran Monday on the horn here in the Moran Monday tent. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Here's where you'll find them all. Birchers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger-eaters, lifers, deathers, members of the Toenail Clipping Toothpick Society, Republicans, Libertarians, baggers, booger-eaters, the works. They're all in here to shock you, to amaze you. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this here is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Hurry along, with the general caveat, dear friends and neighbors, kiddies and cousins, with the general caveat that people with purses, small children, wallets, European messenger bags, pets, goldfish should hang on tight to all of them, because once inside, once behind the thin cybernetic veil of canvas, once inside the Moran Monday tent, the Morans can get grabby. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, and you will. You will. You will. Now, what I was saying when... absolutely, soapbox geezer, Morans by the bucket load. Without a doubt. Forklift pallets full of Morans. But what I was getting at earlier is that we're kind of used to it now, aren't we? When Republicans get all racisty and ethnically clueless, that sort of thing, yeah. I mean, we expect it of them. Going back to the 2008 presidential campaign, when bomber John McCain, with the blood of thousands on his hands, innocent thousands, not necessarily even, you know, military thousands, just, you know, your average Vietnamese, when he, during a debate, pointed over and referred to Barack Hussein Obama as that one, and coming forward from there. I mean, oh, God. So we're used to it. And thus, I think because we want better for what is ostensibly our side, and I realize that's open to debate, what constitutes our side. Yes, I understand completely. But we find it a little bit more, a little bit more of a shock to the system when it turns out to be, well, let's put it this way. Over the weekend, they had something in New York City that the likes of you and me will never be invited to. It's an evening they call the Inner Circle Dinner. And, you know, it's a soiree with lots of swanning around the room. And
And politicians show up there, and they have their Lark's Vomit canapes, and they call each other things like old shoe and you good egg you, and say ho 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 when something is funny, and the politicians get involved by performing in what arguably would be uncomfortable skits. So one of the skit teams for Inner Circle Dinner Entertainment there in New York City was Mayor Bill de Blasio and Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Hillary Clinton. And, well, why don't we just, let's hope it works and give it a listen.
I heard my name. I just have to say, thanks for the endorsement, Bill. Took you long enough.
Oh, snap! Sorry, Hillary. I was running on CP time. That's not, I don't like jokes like that, Bill. That's not funny.
Cautious politician time. I've been there. Hey.
Ho, 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 ho. I don't care who you are at. There's real funny, especially down Alabama, Mississippi way. They were also on stage with Leslie Odom Jr., who is one of the actors in the runaway Broadway smash musical Hamilton, and he's a black man, he's an African American man. He says, "I don't like jokes like that, Bill, because CP time is a phrase that was probably invented by white people, probably invented by the same white people who used words like shiftless and uppity to describe what they perceived as the propensity among people of color to not do things in a timely fashion. You know, going back to the days when white people were stealing the labor of people of color under the pernicious guise of slavery. You know, when slaves were building things like the United States Capitol and the White House and every piece of goddamned infrastructure that the American South had and some parts of the American North. Right? Yeah. So it turns into a play on words. Where, no, Bill de Blasio, who famously is in what is referred to as a mixed-race marriage, whatever that means, no, that did not mean colored people time. It meant cautious politician time. Yeah, I know, jokes get real unfunny when you start having to explain them, but that's where we are. And you would hope, you'd kind of like to think that even for somebody like Mayor Bill de Blasio, who was subjected to some pretty nasty smears in his own campaign for mayor, because of his marriage and because of the fact that he said that the New York City Police Department had some racism problems. As long as we're among the inner circle of political power, we can make those jokes, and we'll let everybody, because see this, I mean, that shows that like these white people are like on the inside, right? Yeah. And you know, I mean, Hillary won all the Confederate states, so that means that you know, she's got carte blanche to make rude, nasty jokes like that, because everybody will understand she don't mean nothing by it. And see that, and we wouldn't want people thinking we were having to be politically correct now, would we? You know what? She would have gotten, they would have gotten a lot bigger laugh at, say, a Koch brothers soiree with that, don't you think? But it happens. And when it does happen, some folks aren't any too crazy about it. One gets the idea that former Ohio State Senator Nina Turner might not have much approved of it, although, I mean, there's nothing in it. I mean, I don't know. But the one of the bookers over at Chicken Noodle News got in touch with Nina Turner to have her on Chris Cuomo's program, where the question was, you know, just why is it? What explains African American support for Hillary Clinton in the face of all the negative outcomes for African Americans that flowed from Clinton administration policies back in the 90s? Fair question. And of course, this also comes after Bill Clinton's completely tone-deaf response to protesters who were concerned about those very self-same policies I just described, in which he accused them of defending gang bangers and drug lords. Mm-hmm. Because, see, in Bill Clinton's world, if you criticize something Bill Clinton did, you must be for the other side. George W. Bush is apparently not the only one capable of engaging in stupid dualisms. Hey, you're either for us or against it. You're either for us or against us. I couldn't agree with you more, George. Yeah, I couldn't. So let's run over and check out the audio from Chicken Noodle News with former Ohio State Senator Nina Turner, because she usually does. She's not one to hold back. Working.
Well, Chris, it's very clear. I mean, President Clinton cannot, on one hand, apologize before the NAACP and then come face to face with Black Lives Matter leaders, women who he, in fact, called girls, and blame them for the policies of the 1990s. It just doesn't make sense. We cannot be super predators in the 90s and a firewall in 2016. So Senator Bernie Sanders had it just right. The president does owe the American people an apology. African Americans for far too long have been painted as the other, and the term itself, predator, is bad enough. Adding super predator to it as another dimension, and we know the impact that that has on the African American community and how we're seen in the United States of America.
Congressman?
Well, desperate candidates say desperate things, and what we've seen in state after state is that Senator Bernie Sanders has consistently lost the African-American vote decisively. And there's a reason for that. Secretary Clinton has been supporting issues of importance to the African-American community, going all the way back to her early days as an attorney with the Children's Defense Fund, fighting against the incarceration of young teenagers in adult prisons. As a first lady in Arkansas, she helped to create a civil legal services program that provided legal representation to thousands of indigent individuals, many of whom...
This, by the way, this is Representative Jeffries, who is obviously a surrogate for Hillary Clinton. And you'll notice that Bernie loses the black vote everywhere, you know, except where he doesn't. But we're just going to keep repeating the right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Just another day in Happy Freaking Valley. Former Senator Turner is from Ohio. Representative Jeffries, Representative Hakeem Jeffries is from New York. And I guess everybody's entitled to their opinion, but are they entitled to their own facts?
Whom were African American. In the 1990s, she was a leader in helping to put into place the Children's Health Insurance program, which was a bridge really between Medicare and the Affordable Care Act. Millions of people, many of whom are African American children, now have health coverage as a result of her efforts and that of some others. And then, of course, as a senator right here from New York for 8 years, she consistently stood on the side of issues of importance to the African American community. And so dusting off a word from the 1990s that Secretary Clinton herself has said was a poor choice and she would never use again is just desperation.
Yeah, except for, well, was she representing the interests of the black community in among her constituents in New York when she cast that bankruptcy bill vote? Was she acting in the best interests of her African American constituency in New York when, of course, she went along with Dick Cheney and Dim Leader and voted to launch an attack on the innocent people of Iraq and wound up killing a million or so innocent non-combatant civilians? Of course, no small number of African Americans came back from that conflict in boxes, because of course we have this thing that's commonly known as the poverty draft in the military, where people with no hope, no future, no nothing, wind up going into the military and hoping against hope that they don't get their brains splattered all over some dusty Middle Eastern road in exchange for a few years of pay and a difficult to realize the promise of college later. Yeah, I don't know. So let's just...
Well, Chris, you know, the secretary should get that message to the president. If, in fact, it is that she apologized, if that is how she really feels, then she needs to get that message to President Clinton. The facts are this. You're right. Desperate people... desperate things, and the Clinton campaign is very desperate right now. When we talk about consistency, let's talk about consistency. Senator Sanders has been consistent. He put his body on the line in the 1960s as a young man. He was arrested for it. He had to pay a fine for standing up against racism and discrimination. He doesn't change his positions based on the time. In 2008, President Obama was not qualified, according to then Senator Clinton, but now they're besties. So let's talk about consistency. Senator Sanders has been consistent standing up against the working poor and the middle class in this country. He doesn't change his message based on what will resonate with the voters. And there's a different environment right now. And the American people, they're sick and tired of being used for convenience. They want a leader who is consistent, and that leader is Senator Sanders.
Now, let me ask you one point of clarification. Does the Sanders campaign, U.S. as surrogate, do you believe that Hillary Clinton holds bad ideas where African Americans are involved? That she sees them as predators? Do you believe that?
The bottom line is this. We can't be super predators one day and a firewall the next. Even at the Black Girls Rock. Even the words coming out of her mouth that day. Black women have written, and you can go all over social media, that they felt that it was empty. Some in the African-American community do feel used. We need to have this conversation about what it means and what African-Americans do mean in a broader range to the Democratic Party, since we are the loyalist base to the party. And I would argue that the secretary is enjoying the history, not the brand loyalty that African Americans tend to have. She has been running for president for the last 8 years. She has had the benefit of a national profile since the 90s, and Senator Sanders has just come on the scene 11 months in terms of running for president. But in terms of standing up for the working poor in this country, and in terms of standing up for bad trade deals in this country, and in terms of standing up for universal health care in this country, he doesn't go to a bill signing for $15 an hour, but yet refuses to support that, raising that wage on the federal level. He has been consistent and honest throughout this.
Okay.
I think that lays it out pretty clearly, don't you? Because, that $15 minimum, that stings. That does. By the way, a note coming from Ron in Raleigh. Subject line, ironic. Hey, Bob, you called it carte blanche, which literally means white card. So what you're saying is that Senator Secretary First Lady Clinton played the privilege card. I don't just say things, Ron. Carte blanche, white card. Yeah, see. Ron got it. Oh, I can't get anything past you guys. You people! So, there's that. And in fact, yes, I agree with her. I think there is a whole lot more consistency in the life and work of Senator Sanders. But now we shift gears. Now we, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, noting, it took one Black Lives Matter wrong-colored to get Bill Clinton to say what Republicans have been trying to get him to say for decades. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that business with the $15 minimum wage, well, if New York wants to do that, that's fine. Because that means that that's something being done by the states. And there are lots of people who argue that those are the kind of questions that need to be answered by the several states, and that we don't need a unified national minimum wage. It's a lot of people who say that. You know who the lot of people who say that are, though? This position with which Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton apparently readily agrees, because she went to celebrate the bill signing in New York that says that New Yorkers will be able to earn $15 an hour some several years down the road, when it will be the equivalent of earning $11 an hour now. Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton agrees with that position. And that position, that states should do that kind of thing, is called, and I sometimes I go blank. I went up on our own damn phone number last week. Kind of drove me crazy. There's something out there. There's a term for what it means when you leave things to the states to do instead of the federal government. States' rights. That's it. States' rights. Actually, you might not recognize the phrase unless it's said in its proper... States' rights. For instance, lots and lots of people who happen to be you know, upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian, Republican, teabaggers, birthers, deathers, ninthers, booger eaters, toenail clipping, toothpick club members. They believe in states' rights. For instance, if two men who love each other dearly and would like to seal that bond in some sort of marriage, or two women who love each other dearly. Well, there are many, many people, almost exclusively Republicans, who think that that should be left up to the states. So that if two men who love each other in New York want to get married, they can get married. But if two men who love each other in Mississippi want to get married, they get told, oh, hell no, because Jesus. See how it works? That's how it works. So while Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is all for states' rights to enact a $15 minimum wage in New York, she has yet to say that that should be done on a national level. And don't be surprised, because it is not at all unusual for Democrats from the Deep South, you know, Arkansas is the Deep South, kind of westish, but still the South, sent plenty of people into that little dust-up back in 1861. Don't be surprised that a politician from the Deep South would espouse states' rights. Block grants to the states are another form of states' rights, in which instead of having the federal government say, okay, we're going to administer the program nationally with national standards for everybody, no, a lot of people who often turn out to be birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, libertarians, Republicans, members of the toenail clipping toothpick club, they like block grants too, because it gives states rights to do with the money as they see fit. And guess what? Back in the mid-90s, back when we were kneecapping back when we were kneecapping the poor with welfare reform and the era of big government is over. Back then, welfare monies were passed out as states' rights block grants. So don't be surprised that Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is a states' rights Southern politician, no matter how many times she, you know, claims to be a New Yorker. Right. But now we turn away from that. And for those of you who participate in my, in my Facebook page, you'll know where I'm going with this. And yes, this addresses issues of race again. Okay, I'm not worried. I'm not so worried about the memory loss now. Ron and Raleigh saying, reasonably clear signal with relative little cognitive dissonance up here in the once again great white north. Regarding memory loss, Bob, it gets worse. I forget my first wife's birthday every single year since she gained her current status as ex-wife almost 40 years ago. Oh, my. Oh, my. What's that, Brother Deacon Asa? Brother Deacon Asa asks, do any of the members of the Horn Family Commune Congregation want to get a pool going on at what stage during the primaries Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton's campaign is going to pull out the Jew card? Oh, my. Y'all can do that if you want to. But there will be no toasters awarded. Yeah, anyhow, So I'm going to bring it back home a little bit more locally. And I really honestly, earnestly, and sincerely want to, I want your thoughts on this particular issue. You know, I mentioned Friday, I think, on the Malloy broadcast that I was going, part of my weekend was going to be taken up in county Democratic conventioning. Well, it didn't turn out that way. But regardless, the county Democratic conventions were had all over this state for the purpose of selecting delegates to the state convention on June 10th, the Democratic primaries on May 10th. And, of course, being a big convention day, oh, dear God, did I screw up? No, that wasn't Ron in Raleigh with the memory problem. That was Ron in the far refrozen north. Thank you. Wow, I am falling apart. But no, anyway, so the big shot politicians running for statewide office were all over hither, thither, and yon. Booth Goodwin, who's running for the Democratic nomination, showed up at dinner honoring a longtime public servant that was held down in Summers County down in Hinton, and Booth Goodwin showed up there, as did Jim Justice. Now, we haven't spent just a whole lot of time In discussing Jim Justice. Here's the thumbnail précis. Jim Justice was born on third, thinking he hit a triple. He was born into wealth. He is, in fact, the richest man in West Virginia. He's a billionaire. Needless to say, he is also a coal baron. This is the guy who sold his operations out to the Russians. He sold West Virginia and the United States out to the Russians for a cool wad of $500 million or something. And then when the ruble went to hell, he turned around and bought his operations back at a profit. Ooh, that's some businessman. My goodness, he must be... He must be well suited to being a governor. Well, along the way, he also doesn't pay his bills. He gets sued by state governments. He gets sued. He gets contempt orders placed against him in federal court for being in contempt of federal court orders. He gets pulled over by a local member of the constabulary, and basically gives him down the road, and I'm going to talk to your boss. Do you know who I am? All right. He is, in a word, a dick. Okay. So we've established that. Hey, he's got a horse-gagging wad of money. He puts on, for instance, he bought the Greenbrier Resort, which was one of the preeminent Eastern resorts going back into the 19th century, White Sulphur Springs and the restorative tonic mineral baths that originally drew people there. There's this great iconic white, great big, you know, hotel there in Greenbrier County, not too far from the Virginia state line. Costs a prince's ransom to stay there. There are McMansions built all over the place there. He bought it. And when he bought that, he also got a golf course or two out of the bargain. Well, okay, let's let Ron in Canada. Well, he puts it this way. Jim Justice is a walking pustulence, a mobile boil on the ass of West Virginians who should be lanced at the first opportunity. Well, there's our supper, our almost semi-obligatory supper time repulsive image. But I tend to agree. And so, having bought the hotel and then gotten some golf courses into the bargain, he started trying to do things to aggrandize himself and to bring notoriety to his new hotel property. Not the least of which was putting on a PGA golf tournament there around the 4th of July every summer. You may recall hearing me talk about the derecho, them big old badass winds that knocked the living snot out of us here back in 2012. And left us without power off the air for 3 weeks or so. Well, when the derecho hit, it was right smack dab in the middle of golf tournament time. And because Jim Justice is a billionaire, all the resources of the state were turned toward making sure that his golf tournament came off without a hitch. There were stories of National Guardsmen walking the fairways of the golf course, picking up tree limbs. You know, disaster relief. There was not a bag of ice to be had in the state of West Virginia because most of it had gone to the Greenbrier. Well, all this is background. And like I said, I really do want some input on this when we get to the part I want the input on. When you get to be a billionaire, I'd say nine times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, you've developed a personal mythology. And you know, it's not just billionaires that do that. We all kind of have this way that we view ourselves. And that's what I mean by a personal mythology. Now, Jim Justice has a personal mythology. And because he is just obscenely wealthy, well, within that personal mythology, there has to be an explanation for the wealth. And it's, and he really can't leverage the up by my own bootstraps part of it. So instead, he opts for a divine favor story. And yeah, as further background, Ron in the far frozen north says, after he bought the Greenbrier for $22 million, he turned around the very next day and signed an agreement with the Marriott hotel chain that allowed them to manage the hotel, only the hotel, for 10 years in exchange for a guaranteed $100 million 25% due upon signing. In other words, $25 million, if I'm doing my gazettas right, $25 million due upon signing. Then he turned around, then he bought back Bluestone Coal from the Russians for a penny on the dollar, because the ruble had gone into the toilet. So, personal mythology. Well, I have here in front of me a story from the sports section of the Charleston Gazette going back to Wednesday, July the 28th, 2010. Written by Jared Hunt, the headline is Justice Offers Cash for Each Hole in One at Classic. And the name of the golf tournament is the Greenbrier Classic. Now, how something that's, you know, 2 or 3 years old can be classic, well, never mind. It's their only words. And this was shortly after he'd bought the Greenbrier. And he said, and he does, he's got a cornpone accent. I want this place to be profitable. To provide longevity, it has to be that. At the same time, if it's profitable, what I'm hoping to be able to do is take the profit and do something else. Because not to become Reverend Jim, I think that's what I'm supposed to be doing here. Okay, nope, no complaints so far. So far, we're fine. Not even digging a hole. Just say that and shut up. But no, when you're a billionaire with a personal mythology, you want to let others in on your personal mythology. So that they can, you know, be part of the power of myth, right? Well, he followed that up back in 2010. Jesus, Bob, why are you talking about something from 2010? Wait. He followed that up back in 2010 by saying, I tell the Kunta Kinte story all the time. Now, we all know what he's talking about, right? Those of us of a certain age do. Those of us of a certain younger age probably don't. One of the most seminal television experiences of the late 1970s was the creation of a thing called a mini series. In other words, it wouldn't go on for ages and ages and season after season after season like My Three Sons, you know, or the Brady Bunch. It was a mini series. It was, you know, it might not even a usual season's 13 week, no, maybe 7 episodes, a mini series. And they made a mini series of Alex Haley's book Roots, which was a fictionalized account of Alex Haley's search as an African-American man for the roots of his heritage, because he had just enough information passed down by word of mouth through his family to make him curious about where he really did come from. And so he dug back and he found a great-great multi-great-grandfather who was kidnapped in Africa, stolen in Africa, brought across the horrifying Middle Passage, and sold into slavery in the New World. Kunta Kinte. Kunta Kinte is an African tribesman. He has to be broken and made to accept his slave name. There's a horrifying scene at a whipping post. Oh, Jesus. And you know, it was a big deal. And part of the genius of Roots was the fact that people like Chuck Connors and Lorne Greene, you know, a lot of the classic father figures, white men, were cast as the white devils, the bad guys, in this miniseries, and so it forced a certain degree of confrontation in the mind of the viewer. And, of course, it caused quite a stir nationally. Millions tuned in. Because really there hadn't been such a confrontation in television history. I mean, one of the earliest great moments of cinematography and the cinematic arts in this country was D.W. Griffith's making of the silent film Birth of a Nation, which he renamed from a novel called simply The Klansman, and which was widely praised by Woodrow Wilson and featured the alternative Southern history of, terrifying black people and good God-fearing, earnest, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian Klansmen. But okay, so roots and Kunta Kinte. I tell the Kunta Kinte story all the time, and he does. I say, in his life, he had a pretty tough go of it. Well, in my world, I pile up a pile of gold and sit and stare at it, and the good Lord looks at me and said, wait a goddamn minute. Did I issue a hockey puck warning? Because really, this is a hockey puck warning for the fucking ages, okay? And by the way, just in case you're curious, if you go over to his Wikipedia page, it's absolutely repugnant. If you read Jim Justice's Wikipedia page, it would seem that the sun rises and sets right out of Jim Justice's ass, and that when the sun isn't doing it, that he shits ice cream. I mean, he's just a wonderful, wonderful man. Okay, so the hockey puck, couple of extra strips of duct tape, please. Okay, not telling you, just suggesting. We're friends. I tell the Kunta Kinte story all the time. I say, in his life, he had a pretty tough go of it. Well, in my world, I pile up a pile of gold and sit and stare at it, and the good Lord looks at me and says, I could have made you Kunta Kinte. I made you Jim Justice for a reason, to provide jobs and make things happen for everything else. That's what I believe. We'll just take a moment and let the screaming subside and the furniture kicking fall off a little bit. So that's 2010. Yeah, Bob. Yeah, time passes. People change. Here's the thing. I was told that while he was swanning around southern West Virginia this weekend at an event in Mercer County, West Virginia, and I'm still trying to get further verification of this. One of the local TV stations was there, and in fact, they had a story. The blonde lady had a reader over video, and then there was some audio of Jim Justice talking. But they didn't have their camera set up in time to catch Jim Justice on the ninth day of April 2016, once again telling his Kunta Kinte story, which he says he tells all the time. All the time. All the time. And so I read that. And I got to tell you, I became rather flummoxed. I became stumped. Because I was trying to sort out why in the sweet name of all anybody in his right mind would ever say something like this and think it was okay. Why does it have to be Kunta Kinte? I mean, frankly, this story would have just a boatload more relevance if it was about, hell, my great-great-granddaddy, who, let's see here, in his life he had a pretty tough go of it. There aren't just a hell of a lot of people with more than two or three generations in this state, West Virginia, who don't have an ancestor who had a pretty tough go of it in his life. My great-great-granddaddy did. His son-in-law, my grandfather, did. I mean, it's a pretty tough go of it when you have to go down in a gassy, noxious, poisonous hole every day, work for pennies, and hope you don't die before you get out, and leave your wife and your little family utterly destitute and thrown upon the tender mercies of the coal company. What's the phrase again? That's a pretty tough go of it. But no. He uses Kunta Kinte. And for having been stolen from Africa, packed across on the Middle Passage, and sold into human bondage in the New World, I think that qualifies as more than a pretty tough go of it. I mean, you know, for me, I'd call that, you know, a living hell on earth. You know, being whipped until the blood runs freely from one's back, that sort of thing. But Jim Justice, well, okay, look, let's stop beating around the bush. What Jim Justice is saying, and this is kind of a Calvinist thing, Jim Justice is saying that his wealth is a sign that God favors him. What Jim Justice is saying here is that he knows that God has favored him because in this life, he has God caused Jim Justice to be born and made a wealthy white man and not some poor black person. And this made me fit to scream. Precisely. Carol says, aren't African Americans supposed to just get over it? Ain't nobody whipping them now except for them guys in uniform. Mm-hmm. And just ask your average birther, deather, ninther, tenther, bagger, booger, eater, bircher, libertarian, Republican member of the toenail clipping toothpick society, and they'll tell you, because we've had clips time after time after time, that black people should be grateful that they were enslaved because they have better lives here than they ever would have had in Africa, and we gave them Christianity so they don't have to burn in hell. Right? Now, I don't want to overemphasize the point, but this guy is not some lunatic who doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of being elected governor of the state of West Virginia. He's an ex-Republican who is now a Democrat, and he is a dear bosom buddy of Senator Joe Manchin. He is apparently dear friends with former West Virginia Governor Gaston Caperton and Mrs. Caperton. And they're having, among other things, a big fundraiser for him in Charleston that is being with a number of people on the list of people inviting to people to give money to Justice's campaign, as if he needed it. Who are members of the plaintiff's bar? Real heavy hitters in West Virginia. People who have made their livings out of representing injured people, maimed people, butchered people, people who have been harmed by people just like Jim Justice. And this kind of gets all over me. Now, God knows if we were, if this was the Hartman audience or even the Young Turks audience, there would be some sort of upwelling of outrage, because they'd probably be telling you to go and do something to be, go be outraged. Well, I don't tell you to do things. But this guy is probably going to be the gubernatorial nominee of the Democratic Party of the state of West Virginia. And beyond the fact that he has made some portion of his fortune by pouring toxic clouds of deadly dust down onto Appalachian communities from his mountaintop removal operations. Beyond that, how we get beyond that, I, honestly and earnestly don't really know. The guy's a racist. I mean, it's weird. It's weird enough just looking at that quote and knowing that he, as he admits, I tell this story all the time. I tell the Kunta Kinte story all the time, which means that I guess he goes to dinner parties and people say, hey, Jim, we love it when you tell the Kunta Kinte story. Tell the Kunta Kinte story again, would you, Jim? I don't know. Maybe we're supposed to call him Mars Jim. Now, this story's been around for at least 6 years. And not once has anyone in any part of the political universe that is West Virginia ever called him out on this. I mean, Joe Manchin swans around with him. Never given a second thought. Apparently, former Governor Gaston Caperton and Mrs. Caperton just think he's the bee's knees. Not a word. None of those high-toned, highfalutin plaintiff's lawyers have ever said, you know, this is deeply disturbing. And I wonder what would happen if the Democratic Party of the state of West Virginia was called upon to disavow his words. Because see, what makes me kind of sad is that I think I have foreknowledge of what the response would be. Well, political correctness is going to be the end of us. I don't mean nothing by it. I ain't no racist bone in my body. I'm just telling the difference between what it is with me trying to do my good works versus a man who had a pretty rough go of it in life. And yes. Yes, there is an absolute boatload of people in this state who would hear that and say, well, sure. Because he ain't no racist. And thus we see the pernicious nature of racism in American culture, in Southern culture, in Appalachian culture. Now, you take old Johnny Appleseed. He had a pretty tough go of it. Yeah. Or, wait a minute. Now, that old Abe Lincoln, when he was a kid, he had a pretty tough go of it. But no. No. We We get a reference to a fictional black character. Steve in New York with a note says, WWLHS, what would Leona Helmsley say? Only the little pay taxes and their bills. Yeah, because Jim Justice is no great shake at paying his bills either. Of course, as Ron in the far frozen north says, Jim's current definition of a pretty tough go of it is walking up a flight of steps. Ron says 75% would be his guess of the number of people that say, well, he don't mean nothing, but. Yeah. So maybe, you know, I'm just making a big deal out of something that's nothing. But I confess, that I've read that and it just crawled all over me. Disgusting. At the very least, Jim Justice needs, you know, a little edumacating. I wonder if the NAACP in West Virginia, I don't even know who I would contact. I wonder what kind of reaction they would have. I mean, the degree to which this is stupid. Beggars my ability to express it. But the idea that there is still a mindset out there that says that one is born white and wealthy instead of poor and black and enslaved, and that somehow or another, rather than merely the random rolling of the dice, that is somehow a mark of divine favor? I mean, it'd be kind of nice if some of your more enlightened Christian religions around here might address this issue. Because damnation. This kind of Calvinism we can do without. And by the way, in case you were wondering, Jim Justice, in the final analysis, Jim Justice is West Virginia's answer to Donald Trump. Hell, Jim Justice may actually have more money than Donald Trump. Wow. Okay, I've over-filibobstered. It's 13 minutes past the hour. And a gentle reminder that we're trying to raise $300 this evening so that we don't dive deep into a hole. You know, 1 at 300, 2 at 150, 3 at 100, 6 at 50, 12 at 25, 24 at 12 and a half, and 48 at $6 and... I get lost. PayPal button's over at headonradionetwork.com. We're 11 days into the month of April, and we have a ton of bills to pay. We always have a ton of bills to pay. Because you guys are having to do the heavy lifting for the George Soroses of the world. If you prefer to participate by mail, the mailing address is The Horn. For checks and money orders, please. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. made payable to the Horn. Let me know. Send me an email, something like that, and I'll let Boss Man Wayne know that he doesn't have to put on the spider-proof gloves to reach into the echo chamber as he fights off the Grand Kleagle and the exalted Grand Dragon to get to our mailbox. But that's how we keep all this going, and it would be great to take a bite out of that $300. Let's put a few shovelfuls in on that $300 hole. This is listener-supported conversation radio. The conversation is the critical part. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you know how to do it, I trust. There are a couple of different phone lines. The Stress Line, named after the irrepressible Bill Mr. Stress Miller. The Stress Line is 304-663-4676. The other line is 304-574-8178. And, of course, from anywhere on the planet, via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. Okie dokie. Yeah. All right, so break time, and then we'll see what happens next. I'm Bob Kincaid. Hey, happy birthday, Jules. Happy birthday indeed.
Joseph's face was black as night. The pale yellow moon shone in his eyes. His path was marked by the stars in the southern hemisphere, and he walked his days under Africa's skies. This is the story of how we begin to remember. Pulsing of love in the vein. After the dream of falling and calling your name out, these are the roots of rhythm, and the roots of rhythm remain. In early memory, mission music was ringing around my nursery door. I said, take this child, Lord, from Tucson, Arizona. Give her the wings to fly through harmony, and she won't bother no more. This is the story of how we begin to remember. This is the powerful pulsing of love in the vein. After the dream of falling and calling your name out, these are the roots of rhythm, and the roots of rhythm remain. Da ba boom ba boom ba ooh. Da ba boom ba boom ba ooh. Joseph's face was as black as the night, and the pale yellow moon shone in his eyes. His path was marked by the stars in the southern hemisphere, and he walked the length of his days under African skies.
20 minutes past the hour. There were a lot of great choices for bumping out of Jim Justice there, but that seemed to work. Let's see. I want to do something real quick, lest it slip my mind. You know, one of our longtime friends, members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, is none other than Dr. John. And Dr. John, who has provided so much in-depth analysis over the years, and from whom I can't wait till he gets around to the podcast and hears the Jim Justice Kunta Kinte story. Dr. John was busy today. You want to know what Dr. John was busy doing today? Dr. John was busy talking to Bernie today. Yeah. No, really. Not kidding. Thought you'd like to hear this.
This region has seen a decades-long decline in manufacturing, and with that, a loss of opportunity for a lot of young people to earn a middle-class living. I'm wondering how you would propose to sort of incentivize business and industry to come back and reinvest.
Good. Here. Very important issue. And one way we would do it is by radically transforming our trade policies. What has gone on now for decades is large multinational corporations have shut down here in the United States, moved to low-wage countries abroad, and brought their products back into this country. We have lost millions of decent-paying jobs as a result of our disastrous trade policies, and that is one of the areas where Secretary Clinton and I have strong disagreements.
Okay, so time out real quick. I neglected to mention something. Turns out this is a real big deal, because you're going to hear something here in a minute that hasn't really been said before. Not in terms these plain, this plain. Not in expressly these terms. You'll know it when you hear it.
She has supported virtually all of these terrible trade agreements. I have opposed all of them. But changing our trade policy is one important way to revitalize manufacturing. Number two, we've got to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. We need pay equity for women. And furthermore, we need to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure, that is, water systems, wastewater plants, roads and bridges and airports. When we do that, we can create up to 13 million decent paying jobs.
You're well aware that upstate and downstate New York are radically different places. So I'm wondering, how can you speak at once to folks who are struggling with poverty down in an urban area and also up here? Maybe different causes, but right. Similar effects.
Well, you know, I do come from the state of New York, a state of... I was born in New York, but I represent Vermont, and Vermont is a very rural state. So I am familiar with some of the problems of rural poverty. And having grown up in a 3.5-room rent-controlled apartment in Brooklyn, New York, I also know something about what goes on in a city. But I think the issues, the need to create decent-paying jobs, the need to raise the minimum wage to a living wage, the need for pay equity for women, the need to rebuild our infrastructure, the need to transform our trade policy, that is important for upstate. That is important for the city as well.
Absolutely. Last question for you. You support the New York State's ban on fracking, and
yes.
Would you extend it to other places where it's currently allowed, like Pennsylvania?
Absolutely. I think we have a major looming crisis in this country and around the world, by the way, in terms of clean water. And we cannot sacrifice clean water for the gains of the fossil fuel industry. So I believe that we should move toward a ban on fracking. This is something where Secretary Clinton and I have a disagreement as well.
Thank you very much.
Breaking. Bernie Sanders says we need an outright ban on fracking. And yeah, that is a place where he's got a disagreement with Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. Because, well, she would never, ever, ever, ever dare to say that we should not frack, baby, frack. But big congratulations to our dear friend, my dear friend, Dr. John. In breaking some breaking a pretty big story. Via his home up in New York. This was at a rally. This was at a rally for Bernie that was very well attended up in Binghamton. And Bernie just keeps saying things that are unequivocal and make loads of sense. I've got a little more sound from the rally itself, from his speech. But he said, "You all know what the American dream is about, and I'm proud of that. I'm a product of that. I will be damned if we're going to see the American dream die." Strong. Strong indeed. Hey! Up in the far frozen wastes of Canada, it's our buddy Ron. What's happening, Ron?
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm no longer speaking through gritted teeth and clenched lips. We've moved on from the subject of Jim Justice.
Well, are we going to be gritting and clenching again at some point?
I think perhaps once or twice in the past I've mentioned there's at least two generations of utmost dislike towards that big walking prick in our family.
Do you know anything about his background? I mean, where'd all the money come from?
He got a lot of it from his dad. He started Bluestone Coal.
So it was what I said. Born on third, thinking yep. He hit a triple.
Yep. And did you know that, well, maybe you do now that you read that glowing entry in Wikipedia, he's the largest corn farmer on the entire East Coast, east of the Mississippi.
Hot damn! I bet a feller could make a pretty fine pot of liquor with that.
Yep. And my uncle, much revered in the family, especially by me, worked as a heavy equipment mechanic at Bluestone Farms, which is in, I guess it got roughly 50,000 acres across southern West Virginia. It got royally hosed on overtime once and quit on a matter of principle. And, that sort of ran through the family for a long time. We've remembered. I figure it'll be gone by three or four more generations, but...
don't necessarily give up. I mean, there's probably little justices running around, aren't there?
Yeah. I've only been glared at once directly by Jim Justice. And it's my very first year volunteering as a marshal at the golf tournament. And it was a Wednesday, the Pro-Am. And they sent out an active request. Anyone who wants volunteer, we know you got schedules, but if you'll show up and do the Pro-Am, that would be greatly appreciated. And so I did. And
When you're marshaling, do you get a badge and a gun?
I know.
Damn it.
No. You get a emblem to hang around your neck and a meal voucher for a cucumber sandwich or whatever you want from the concession stand, up to a value of $11.50.
Ooh-wee. Ooh,
yeah. And you're not allowed to use that voucher to buy beer.
Bastards.
Double word.
Well, you can't have the marshals out there wandering about the course all liquored up.
Why not?
Well, I mean, what if somebody improves his lie judge smells and kicks it out into the fairway?
You mean like justice apparently expects you to do? We're getting back to my hostile look.
Well, you know, that old Kunta Kinte, he had a pretty rough go of it. He had to play it as it lied.
Yeah, he was playing in the pro-am. He was playing with, guess who? Caperton. And some other schmuck whose name I can't remember, and John Daly. And I'm up. They got a hit across a water hazard on the dog leg right. And I'm over on the other side of the fairway because I know where the balls are going to go. And sure enough, he hits it into the rough. And it's all sort of hummocky and stuff. Hits the ball over there, justice does. And I went over to find it and accidentally stepped on it.
Damn you.
And
did it turn and, was it one of those, did it turn into one of those fried egg lies?
Under about 4 inches of dead grass. And I
got it.
And he's on camera. And I said, "We found your ball, sir." You know, I was just your basic humble hillbilly. "We found your ball, sir. It's right over here."
Did you nod your head a little bit? And,
No, I don't do that obsequious stuff all that well. But it was one of the more enjoyable moments. But I have to tell you about
And did Gaston walk over and say, improve your lie, Mr. Justice?
No. I will give him credit, since the TV cameras were on him and had scanned where his ball was lying. He did hit the ball damn near 30 yards.
Big old chili dipper?
And then he picked it up and put it in his pocket and trundled off in his golf cart. And I went up to talk to his big buddy, John Daly.
John, what would you use to get out of a mess like that? Long neck?
Dynamite. Well, you know, you have to savor these little moments when they pop up. But
where's Chai Chai Rodriguez when you need him? Big hat, big boots, no goddamn cattle.
Well, you know, it was one of those moral dilemmas, and I think I failed. I'll be in hell for that.
I'll be
there with a lot of my friends.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing you're not going to go through the pearly gates straight to the butler cabin.
Probably not. I did have a
My God, did you watch that this weekend?
Oh. Yeah.
I mean, we're going to lose about half the, probably three quarters. Okay. Seven-eighths of the Horn family on this, but...
Yeah. All the ones who have never played golf.
But the movie Tin Cup with Kevin Costner.
Oh, that thought went through my mind of watching that, yeah.
And he just stands there and just, you know, listen, you can be up and down. It's just okay. You know, go for the playoff. Fuck this. And just... Oh, my God. This was worse than the great Greg Norman fall apart, I thought.
I watched the Norman one, too. I think Norman was worse. The thing is, Spieth is only 22 years old.
Yeah.
And a lot of people forget that. I mean, hell, you don't start growing up until you're 25. So here's a kid on the biggest stage in the golfing world, on one of the most revered courses in the entire golfing world, in the lead, and he chili dips one into the water.
Floop.
And he follows up with another one.
Floop.
And even he would admit after the round, okay, if I'd listened to my caddy, I would have simply gone to the drop area, hit it into the bunker, and he would have saved two strokes.
Yeah. Get up, get down. It's amen corner.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a character-building moment for him. It's going to be interesting to watch how the young man comes back.
Well, that's
from
the thing, though. He's 22. 22 is too young to have the Bill Buckner albatross hung around your neck.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and Greg last year, he hung up a score like Tiger Woods did when he was a young man.
Yep.
And this year, and you know, they'll remember him unless he gets another green jacket or unless he goes on a tear on the rest of the year's tour. He's going to be remembered for you're him.
Oh yeah.
Now, unlike Bill Buckner, he's not going to have an entire region of the country ready to throttle him, but
lynching, yeah.
But you know, and so the English guy, the Vickers kid.
You mean Vicar Jim?
No, different Vicar. the guy who won. What was his name?
Yeah, Willett.
Yeah, Willett. He's the son of some English vicar.
He is. And Vickers get to play golf too, apparently.
But he
did something that. He simply played a good round. He played a 67 on the final day of the Masters under intense pressure and competition. And he came through and survived. More power to him. I mean, the kid earned every bit of what he got.
But I actually interrupted you by saying, oh my God, did you watch that?
Remember earlier we were talking about memory loss?
Yes.
I can't remember what we were talking about when you interrupted.
Damn you, Reverend Craig.
Not yet. But we're homing in on it. But I would like to pass on one more story that was almost as satisfying as Jim Justice's golf ball. Driving home Wednesday night from the beautiful environs of rural West Virginia, and I was expecting snow in New York State. Didn't get it. Finally got to the border, got a message on my cell phone, welcome back to Canada, while I'm still 9 cars and 2 trailer trucks behind the actual entrance to Canada past the customs guy, and get the text message, look up, starting to snow. It's snowing heavily by the time I get to the actual border official.
Of course.
And I hit the shift change. So they hold me at the end of the line until the new guy comes on. New guy comes on, I'm his first victim of the night. And so, where you been? Down in West Virginia. Why were you there? Well, I thought I was going to attend a funeral. And he looks at me and he says, you thought? I said, well, yeah, he didn't die. Okay. The guy hands me my passport back and away we go. It was, you don't run into that often.
Well, and see, the key there, Ron, is your choice of verbs. You said he didn't die. It might have gotten considerably more interesting had you responded, he wouldn't die.
Agreed.
You know, especially if you'd had a chainsaw and a baseball bat and a few more things like that in the back seat.
I had golf clubs, but
close.
I'm an optimist.
Well, you know, the mashy niblet can be highly effective.
Anyway, I'm driving up the road on my snow tires, which a week before I thought I really should change these out. And the road, that's our version of the interstate's covered in snow. And I'm on snow tires and going, oh, this is going to work out fine. And then I get on the four-lane highway heading north to Ottawa, and the snow is getting deeper and deeper. Everybody's going slower because most of them don't have snow tires. And I'm behind a guy at one point that's doing 20 miles an hour. Yeah, okay. I pull out and go over the hump in the middle between the two lanes because they're not plowing because it's going to warm up tomorrow and rain and all the plows are in the garage.
And why so would we, and why pay the OT?
Right. And so I pull across the hump. I hadn't gone 100 feet. And I got some guy right on my ass, flashing his lights and tooting his horn. Okay. I gave him, you know, the Quebec hand signal in the mirror so that he couldn't misinterpret what I was thinking. Got in front of the guy I was passing, pulled over to the right, and away he went. In the world's best all-weather vehicle, a Dodge Caravan.
are we being facetious?
Sort of.
Okay, just 10 miles, checking.
Yeah, 10 miles up the road, I see the flashing blue and red lights, and everybody slows down, moves to the left-hand lane, because that's what we do up here. And I get up to the car, and I see a Dodge Caravan 75 feet off the road in the woods. And I see a guy standing beside the road talking to a policeman, waving his arms wildly. At which point I slowed down, rolled down my window, tooted my horn, gave the guy the finger and went, nah, nah, and drove on. That was as much a message to the cop as it was to the guy. He wasn't about to chase me, but it was one of those moments where the goddess of irony just popped up.
Okay, well, that was also one of those moments where we knew that where the world figured out you were not a native Canadian. That is not Canadian behavior.
No, it wasn't. It didn't appear in the local newspaper in Spencerville, which is a little town that I was passing through. It was just one of those moments that made me smile after 15 hours on the road.
Those are important. How far were you from home at the moment?
Approximately 50 miles and an hour and a half.
Nice drive.
Yeah.
So are the snow tires staying on for a little while longer?
They are. We had another 2.5 inches this morning, but it's supposed to be 65 by the weekend, which is why the golf clubs are still in the back of my car.
Well, see, it was 18 here overnight on Saturday.
Yep.
And it was, you know, 70 by yesterday afternoon.
I was down there when it was 18.
And I'm an old parrot head. So there's certain that I've come to the realization that a 2-inch snow in April is more cruel, brutal, and barbaric than a 2-foot damn blizzard in late January.
It is, because it blows all those aspirational hopes you've got of things are going to get better. Blow them right out the window.
Oh yeah, you know we're done with any idea of a fruit tree season around here.
Yeah. Well, one old guy put it: April is the trap door on the gallows. You get all psyched up, everything's feeling good, and then ka-ching. Yeah.
I hope we're done with it, but I went and found there's a particular Jimmy Buffett song I have for just such moments where he sings, this morning I shot 6 holes in my freezer. I think I've got cabin fever. Somebody sound the alarm.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, while I was down there the last trip, I shot some absolutely wonderful photographs of magnolias and redbud trees.
Yes, you did.
And,
And I'm particularly fond of the red buds.
Yeah.
Because they usually come on when nothing else is green yet, or just when just the first hints of green are coming out. And you get this just mad contrast between that young yellowy green and that outrageous, dare I say it, sensual purpley pink of the red buds. I mean, they're not even red.
No, they're not.
And the funny thing is,
they're purpley pink. I've been trying to think of the name for what that color is without sounding gay.
Fuchsia?
But no. I've learned all about fuchsia. I lived in San Francisco for years. Now, it ain't that, but it's a weird color to describe because it goes from very, very pale to quite intense, but all in a small bud and often on the same tree at the same time.
Well, and the funny thing is, those red buds, for as beautiful as they are in the early spring, they're just scrubs.
Yeah, they are, right beside the highways.
You'd never know that they'd ever been beautiful if you were walking past them on a hike.
Nope. And I saw more fuchsia on back roads this year than I've seen for years. Just gorgeous stuff. Anyway, I'm going to let you go off here and hopefully raise some money.
Well, we're off and running. We've got to start. Thanks very kindly.
Are you talking about golf didn't stifle it?
No. We're off and running with Kim in Minnesota, and so we've got $275 to go.
Well, there you go. Okay, I'm gonna bail here. I got a couple of things to do before I go visit Reverend Craig and do my confessional.
Absolutely, make sure you express that mea culpa, in a most sincere form.
And I'll pass on your regards.
Do please.
By the way, I got to ask, how are the cigars?
The cigars are wonderful. I've never smoked a better machine rolled cigar. I say that in all sincerity. It smokes like a Cuban, it tastes like a Cuban, and I don't have to fool around.
Makes you mellow like a Cuban.
Yeah, and I don't have to fool around with a cigar cutter.
Hmm.
And they're nice tubos, which means that I save the tubes because they come in handy for non-tubed cigar transportation later. And they're lovely.
Or in case you got to go for a urine test.
Because I get lost in the transition from one tube to the next, and it's just it's a mess.
No, I'm glad you like them.
Oh no, they are. They're lovely. They're lovely by themselves. They're lovely with a little bit of the eau de vie of an old Baptist minister or three. They work well with the makings of the Irish or the Scottish, and even the French who make liquor out of champagne grapes. So, yeah.
There you go.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, sir.
All right, you take care, Ron.
Okay.
Bye
bye.
Our buddy Ron in Canada, and we go from Canada to South Carolina, Stan.
Anybody home?
I am.
What's going on, man? How you doing?
What's happening, Todd?
Well, oh, wow, it does. It seems like I might have heard some filibuster. Were you talking about colored people's time?
That was part of it. Yeah, they were. Mayor de Blasio of New York and Hillary Clinton were riffing on CPT there at the Inner Circle dinner in New York over the weekend.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I was just kind of catching parts in and out. And it's just so strange to hear somebody talk about, CP or CPT. That's kind of interesting.
Well, but see, they made it extra cute by saying, cautious politician time.
Yeah, that doesn't smell right.
I mean, if they had I mean, isn't that just one little notch over from just coming on stage in blackface?
Yes, minstrelish. Yes. Yes. Short answer. Yeah. No. I mean, even if, see, that's what I'm saying. We do it. It seems like collectively, this our collective, you know, nationally, we had just sunk into this nonsense where I didn't mean it like that because, you know, we're just, I should speak the way I feel. And I can't, you know, whatever you read into it, that's your business.
Well, and they had a black guy on stage with them.
Yeah.
Wearing late 18th century revolutionary garb. He was a cast member from the runaway hit musical on Broadway, Hamilton. And, you know, his line, because it was all set up, was to say, "Hey, I don't like that very much." At which point they said, "You mean cautious politician time?" And he said, "Oh, ha 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 ha."
See, that's not even really funny.
No, it's not. And it comes barely a week after Bill Clinton went all in on some protesters who didn't like how his policies had wound up, dropping the hammer on the black community in America.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I totally would have forgotten. I have to take a short segue.
All right. I was
born and raised in that area right there. All right. And I'm going to tell you about the demographics of East Germantown right now. I mean, it's literally, I was born and raised in Germantown. East Germantown is just slightly different. It's the next neighborhood over. It's just a district, like councilmatic districts. That's what they call them. Anyway, it's like 99% black, but it's like Harlem used to be maybe in the 50s and 40s where you had very poor people, doctors, lawyers, judges, everybody. And now you've got buppies and yuppies that live there also, right, in the area. These are educated. They might be poor, but they're not stupid. See?
See, I never really equated poverty with stupidity, but I guess maybe some people do.
Well, when you live in South Carolina, you know, kind of. You know, if, whenever I call in, I might have to say, yeah, I'm calling from the land of minimally adequate. You know, that's the of that education here. But yeah, he didn't know he was stepping into, you know, and I'm not trying to get all personal with this. I'm just saying that, you know, black people are not monolithic and we're devolving into some nonsense now. This is like so ridiculous.
Well, I haven't saw one diehard Hillary supporter whom I respect. Who has not been, you know, nasty about it, and we've remained cordial. But I saw where she posted, "Wow, did he screw this one up? It's time to reel Bill back into the fold."
Yeah,
get it, Bill Fold.
No, yeah, well, look, but he wasn't even supposed to. I mean, she promised. She said, "Well, no, he's not going to be part of my campaign." I mean, maybe I'm dreaming, but I seem to remember that very specifically at the beginning of her campaign. Am I wrong?
I can't remember. Honestly, I can't.
Okay.
I mean, it seems counterintuitive to me that would be the case, Todd. Just because, you know, he's the big dog.
Well, that's exactly why she said that, though. She wanted to disassociate herself from him at the time. But anyway, somebody will speak on it. Maybe I'm, you know, I could be mistaken on that. The other thing, you know, I did catch your Justice Cole Barron rant. And, you know.
Okay, you want to help me out a little bit, Todd? Because, I mean.
That's, yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
No, help me out, because I'm sitting here formulating opinions as, you know, one of the whitest, pinkest people in America who, you know, gets a sunburn under the refrigerator bulb.
Well, first of all, I forget sometimes how old I am, and that you know, it's nice that you went into the explanation of what Roots was about, because it was a big deal. It was like Saturday Night Live used to be, where people would run home and you didn't want to miss it because really nobody had a VCR or anything. It was a big deal. Number one, it was a big deal for a lot of people. And like you said, it got the miniseries, like, you know, jumped off. Okay. So that being said, I can't imagine I'm the only one. As soon as you went into the preface of the introduction of who this guy was, Mr. Justice, and you said what he said about Cole, and of course, my first thought was, oh, so Joseph Campbell had to come up from the dead and make a separate chapter for you because you're a fucking Kubrick motherfucker, right? You know what I'm saying? His power of myth.
Nice to wrap in Joseph Campbell there. Yeah, and look, unless I'm completely clueless about this, if Donald Trump had said this, if Donald Trump said, you know, I was born, I was born Donald Trump instead of Kunta Kinte, so that I could do great things, wonder, you know, the best things for people with my wealth. Wouldn't that be on like every goddamn newscast in this whole country?
Of course it would be, but even Trump wouldn't do that because he grew up in the city. He at least has that much sense. See, this guy here, he has no sense. See, let me tell you what happened. As soon as you talked about who he was, and when you said Kunta Kinte, I went, what? I said it out loud, what? What? So, but see, I know what he's saying. He's saying, well, at least I wasn't born the lowliest of the lowly. That's what he means. And see, a lot of white people understand, like, when they see a successful black person, there's two ways to look at this. When they see a successful black person, like, well, how did you get there? Because I've done everything that I could to keep you from doing anything. You know, that's option A. Option B is like, well, damn, that's all right. You know, you worked hard and you're different. You know, and then there's option C, which is not that obvious, which is like, well, whatever, man, we're all the same. You know. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, well, yeah, it does. And, I mean, I want to go back to the Kunta Kinte reference.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really think that's a goddamn onion, Todd, with layer after layer after layer after layer of meaning. Because that was the late 70s, right?
Oh, yeah. That was in 1977.
Okay, so...
Okay, so... 76, 77. Yeah.
So we're coming up on 40 years ago.
Right. So why is he even bringing that up? Who the hell even remembers that now, right?
How
old is this guy? I'm trying to get a frame of reference.
The 60s.
Mm-hmm. So his formative years, he would have been probably 20 something. I don't know.
Yeah, and rich. Unless he would. And rich.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, he's got the right food.
Does the Kunta Kinte reference tell us that was the last time he was really aware of any blackness?
Well, when I was in West Virginia, I can remember Charleston. I saw some black people. Mm-hmm. I didn't see a whole lot of black people. But, you know, what is that? That's an anomaly. I don't live there. I don't know. But.
But, I mean, that's what it's, I mean.
I don't understand.
I mean, at least update the myth, Todd. I mean, you know, that Michael Brown, he had a pretty tough go of it. Okay? That Eric Garner, he had a pretty tough go of it. But, see, you can't do that because they had it coming. But isn't that the implication that sort of resides... if you drill down into this, isn't that the implication that resides at the center of it all? That, yeah, he had a tough go of it, but that was what God gave him. Because God's over there giving Jim Justice that pile of gold that he looks at and said, you know, I made you Jim Justice, not Kunta Kinte.
Well, see, that's where your Calvinist reference that I heard, I think, was correct, because, you know, that's the way some people feel. It's like, well, you know, I was selected. This is where I am because of, you know, there's a reason. And you should be lucky that I'm here to make these decisions. You couldn't do it. I was chosen. See?
And I guess that means that he's also chosen, because if God loved him enough to choose him to be rich, then are we to understand by implication that God has also chosen him to be governor?
Well, you know something. You need to ask your compatriots that live.
Well, see, I can't have this conversation around here.
You're serious, aren't you?
Yes, I'm serious, Todd.
Wow, that's terrible. You can't even have a civil conversation about this shit.
Oh, I mean, I couldn't have it with any of my neighbors. I mean, I can talk to Boss Man Wayne about it. We've talked about it. Boss Man Wayne and I have talked about it. Dr. Bill and I have talked about it. But just to talk to the good old boys down to the Rippy Mart? Fuck no.
Okay.
Because if you try to talk, oh Jesus H Christ, if you try to talk race, and I'm not even happy with that word.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to talk race with some out of work coal miner, I mean, come on, quick, crawl into my shoes. You try to talk race with some out of work coal miner, what are you going to hear?
Well, they get all that
goddamn welfare, and I work my ass off for everything I got, and I'm out of work now because them fucking tree huggers.
There you go.
So I ain't got no sympathy for no Black Lives Matter terrorists.
Right. They all be happy they're living here.
Well, we bring them over here, and we give them Christianity so they don't have to burn in hell when they die.
Speaking of living here, I just had to throw this in here quickly. I remember when I was growing up, right, and then, you know, at different schools or whatnot, and somebody would say, or neighborhood, somebody said, oh, go back to Africa. And then when I got a little older, I was like, you know what? A lot of those people, even their grandparents, you know, they're like second generation. You know, they stopped importing slaves in the 1830s. But, you know, that doesn't mean anything. It's just, we're all part of this fabric. Yeah, this is some crazy stuff. I mean, we need to stop this. This is really getting crazy. But
Todd, we're not going to stop it, okay? Because like I said, I am probably the only person with a microphone in the state of West Virginia who is talking about this.
Well, let me ask you a question. Because I thought about this, it just coincided. I thought about this before I heard Dr. Bull's broadcast about it. But I was thinking that, hey, that Trump was like the great white hope also. And this was in light of those statistics about what I call the canary in the coal mine with white males that should be doing okay in the economy, right? And they've been dying from, you know, early deaths from suicide and drug overdoses and things like that. So, honestly, this is what's happening. I mean, look, the economy is not doing what they say on paper, obviously. If you've got a half a brain, you understand that. And there's a lot of people who never thought they would be living the way they are, right? And I'm not even going to put any labels on it. This is putting it out there like that. And they never thought they would be living that way. Whereas a lot of people have been living that way for a long time, and they're kind of used to it. They know it's worse, but it's like, wow, you know, welcome to the club. And they don't like, other than that, a whole group of people don't like being in that club. Who wants to be in that club? But they still vote to be in the club. They're going to keep you in that club. And that club is not a good club. You see?
Yeah.
So. Remember what I keep saying, though. Remember, for months, Trump will not be the nominee.
Well, they're doing all they can to keep him from being the nominee, but Todd, it gives me no joy to hear you say that. That means we're gonna have a proto-Christian or a Christian proto-Ayatollah for the Republican nominee. Now, I guess there are people out there going, "Yeah, we'll just beat his ass." Bullshit.
You know,
especially if Hillary Clinton is the nominee.
Oh, this, you know, this, either way, there's no way to look at this whole thing. No matter what side you're on, no matter who you support, this is just ugly. And I'm telling you, it's coming down to money, which is disgusting. Think about it. You go to an open convention, man, we're going back to like Tammany Hall type of stuff. People are handing off bags of money. You know, because if you're talking about 200 people, 200 or 300 people.
Well, I mean, for me, I think back to, and in fact, it was a defining moment for the Republican Party, the convention of 1880. And that's where you get James A. Garfield, because half the convention wanted Grant and the other half wanted some other guy whose name I can't remember. And in the middle of the convention, and don't think, I mean, we tend to think of them as fools, but some of them know the history. Don't think that this isn't banging around out there somewhere. Garfield got up. He was extremely popular. And here's the irony of it. He got up and said, "We are going to fulfill the legacy of Mr. Lincoln," and that actually meant something to Republicans in 1880. And he gave this marvelous speech, and all of a sudden the whole convention went, "Well, fuck those guys. Let's nominate Garfield." And that happened. That was real. I mean, there are other stories. There are, or other, I guess, cautionary tales. There's Teddy Roosevelt stepping away for, William Howard Taft.
Mm-hmm.
And after mm-hmm. 4 years, Teddy Roosevelt was disgusted with Taft, and so he comes back and tries to get the Republican nomination, doesn't, and then runs as the Bull Moose Party.
Correct. I'm not saying. Yes, right.
But in terms of a classic Republican brokered convention, the standard is 1880.
And it's too bad we don't have photographs. They've been talking about it on C-SPAN and showing, the woodcuts or whatnot, the drawings.
Well, I mean, but there were photographs.
Well, I haven't seen the photographs yet. I want to see that. Because
I think the convention was in Chicago. People, delegates to the convention were sleeping 4, 5, and 6 to a room.
You know what scares me right there? When you say Chicago, I'm taking a lot of wood, gas lamps, curtains. Fire, man, that's what I'm thinking.
And I'm not sure, when was the Great Chicago Fire?
You know, it was in the 1880s. It was in the 1880s.
Because I couldn't remember if it was before or after that convention, so... But the historical precedent, the historical possibility exists. Of course, the whole smoke-filled, the reason the for-profit media stopped covering conventions mostly is because they weren't even good drama anymore.
Right. I remember this when I was growing up. Yeah, you know, when we were growing up, you would say, just hold up. It was just a fun time. People would go and get drunk and everything.
There'd be some gavel-to-gavel coverage somewhere. But, you know, not so much anymore because it was a foregone conclusion. And that is why the for-profit media they've got their collective hands down their pants fondling themselves over the thought of a brokered Republican convention because of what it can mean for their ratings. Because everybody will tune in. You've got this one jackass promising what he calls days of rage. If Trump qualifies for the nomination and they try to take it away from him. I mean, they're talking.
That's what I want to ask you about. Bob, I have you on the line. First of all, go Nova, baby. I knew you were going to win. I knew Nova was going to win. I didn't talk
that
to
was,
you.
And I know our buddy Scott told me he was aware of everything that had happened now. So
Yeah, that is still probably the best ending of a basketball game I've ever seen.
People who don't watch, even if you don't watch basketball, that my friend was amazing.
No, if you're a screenwriter and you've got a story to pitch and you walk into an office in Hollywood and you say, and this is how it's going to end, they will throw you out on your ass. Going, you know, nobody will buy that. That's too sappy. That's too syrupy. That's too sweet. That's too... And, of course, the reason it works in real life is because that never happens in real life.
You know why? Those folks, they played as a team the whole time. They played as a team. That's what we need to get to, playing as a team. But let me ask you something. Let's see. You know what silver or lead means?
No.
All right. So, like, if somebody's trying to extort you, they say you can get with the silver, you can get with the lead. So, take the money I'm paying you, or, you know, you're in the way.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, I'm looking at this Trump thing like a Venn diagram, right? Because remember, he's already told us he's greedy. He's told us he likes to make deals. And he told us he likes to lower educated people for obvious reasons. So, he has this human inertia behind him. And he's not going to be the nominee, and these people are going to be upset, and they like to get liquored up, and they like to shoot guns. So what are we to do with this human inertia? That's my question.
Well, I mean, there's a reason. You know, there was that, and I personally thought some anti-NRA people were probably behind the beginnings of it. But when they announced that no firearms would be allowed at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, you know, there was a petition that went around that got tens of thousands of signatures on it. Well, hell! And pretty soon, the next thing you know, the little mouth-breathing knuckle-walkers were signing on, too, going, I'll be able to bring my freedom protector to the convention, because I love Jesus and Merck. Right? And, you know, it was a delightful little dose of schadenfreude. In which we were all going, yeah, no, really, let the Republicans take their guns to the convention. The hell's wrong with you people, you bunch of chicken shits? Let the and the Secret Service ruined everything, Todd, by saying, well, no, we've got a rule here. I'm afraid we're not going to let the Freedom Protectors into the convention because of national security. I mean, sorry.
But wait a minute. You know there were people they had already made reservations. They told their wives, you know, baby, I'll be back. I got to make this trip.
Yeah, I'm going to open carry my AR-15 over one shoulder and my 50 caliber Desert Eagle. I'm going to have that on my hip. I'm going to have me a boot gun. And I mean, we're going to celebrate the Second Amendment up there in Cleveland.
See? Can I ask you a question about Hillary Clinton?
Yeah.
All right.
And if I know it, I'll answer it.
Okay, that's fair. All right. So, Bernie's probably going to give her his delegate votes, probably, because that's kind of where he's going. You know, with the compromise, he'll make some kind of deal. But looking at her record of voting, how can we trust her to hold up her end of the bargain? If you know where I'm going with this,
in other words,
if she agrees, you know, to incorporate portions of our platform into her, you know, into her candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's going to keep her honest? Because her record.
Nothing.
Absolutely
nothing.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying, man. I'm not feeling great about this.
You see? I mean, I've said all along. If she's the nominee, I think that Bernie should extract concessions. I mean, that's the way conventions work.
Exactly.
That happens in the, you know, the platform is the statement of purpose, the mission statement, if you will, of the party at that time gathered in convention. If she's going to be the nominee, I want a very simple sentence, and she can bury it in the middle of it for all I care.
But I want to hear, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton say, health care is a human right. That's five words, if health care is one word. Health care is a human right.
She has a problem.
Well, she may well choke trying to say it. I want to hear her say, we cannot frack our way into a healthy climate. And you know what else I want to? The one thing I thought I would never have to worry about wanting to hear her say. I want to hear her say, a woman's right to choose is non-negotiable.
Oh, she's been all waffly on that. You could forget, man.
You could have knocked me out of my shoes the other night. I think it was last Monday. It was either on this program or the Malloy program when somebody said, "Oh yeah, you know, over the weekend she said that you can be pro-life and be a feminist at the same time." I was like, "Shit the bed, really?"
Oh man. Look, she has to do better. I mean, everybody's just irritated and pissed the fuck off. Everybody. You know, we're tired of these false choices. We're tired of the least common denominator. You know, we want people that say the truth, and then once people do say the truth and they're winning, they don't get counted. You know?
Well, and those are the other questions that have to be addressed. But they won't be addressed at this convention. But they have to be addressed before the 2000. Oh my God, we haven't had the 2016 election, and I'm already talking about something about 2020.
Oh, no, you're right.
No. Just somebody shoot me in the neck with a Thorazine dart. No, but I want the superdelegate issue addressed, and I want one person, one vote in every Democratic primary. Okay. I don't want to see another goddamn Wyoming where you win by 12 points and you wind up four delegates down to the person that you beat by 12 points.
Do you know how many Americans really believe that every vote is counted and their vote, they have no idea about the Electoral College and how the rules are different and how they make rules up right before the convention on certain sides? They have no clue.
No, and you know, that is not good going forward. You know, I just got a note from James. He says, all deals will be off. Bush was going to be the environment, education, no nation building president. And I'll add parenthetically,
saw
how that worked out.
This woman is, I'm telling you, I'm worried. She is definitely trigger happy, period.
Well, you've got reason to worry. She believed Dick Cheney and George Bush.
See, that's what I don't like. I really don't
like
that.
She stood with Dick Cheney and George Bush instead of standing with Robert Byrd and Dennis Kucinich.
I don't know if I've told you this, but...
And a whole bunch of other people who Bernie Sanders who got it right.
You know, that's what I'm saying. And they, you know, don't persecute him because he's been telling the truth all the time and make him look like a dickhead. He's a dickhead, I'm sorry. Because she can't get her answers straight. You know, she wants everybody to follow her. She had to take a couple of days off because she was just so irate that she had to work this hard, then bring her husband in, and he's got all kind of, I could start talking about it. You know, like my friend, I'm not going to say that. You know what that means. So, it's, you know, come on, man. These people got to shape up, man. It's like you want us to support you, but you got to give us more.
But don't be, damn, Todd. Don't be waiting on a pony, because the pony ain't coming. Yeah, I mean, if Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is who we get, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is who we get.
But look what they get us. And she's look what we have to choose from.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not bashing. Okay, I'm really, really not. I'm trying to be objective as an objective observer of politics. Pretty much all my adult life, she's about the worst Democratic candidate I have ever seen run. And that includes Michael fucking Dukakis, okay?
She's a shade away from Reagan.
That includes Walter Mondale.
Oh, well, the forgotten one.
And it damn sure includes George McGovern. But those three people were reasonably principled men. Not emphasizing men, but they were
right.
You know, they were part of a Democratic Party that the Clintons worked long and hard in the 1990s to kill. Okay?
Well,
that's why you get a Democratic Party that does Republican things. That's why you get a Democratic Party that hands you NAFTA, even though the entirety of your traditional power base is saying, please, Jesus, no, don't sign this nightmare. I mean, that's one of the reasons, Todd, that, and I'm not trying to talk all over your nickel, but that's one of the reasons that I have begun to look back history-wise and ask the question, how much difference would it have made to have had a second term of George H.W. Bush instead of the first term of Bill Clinton? You know, is there anybody out there who can tell me that George H.W. Bush would have made NAFTA worse than it is? George H.W. Bush never could have gotten welfare reform through.
I have been saying this for years, and I'm gonna tell you how I feel about it, because I at the time I was really following. I had stocks and whatnot. I was following this shit. See, what helped Bill Clinton out a lot was that. That was the apex. Well, not the apex, but you see, the internet commerce was booming, and there were no taxes. The internet was growing. That helped him. That helped the economy out a lot. And really, the jobs are out here.
If you couldn't get a job,
you were dead.
Huh? And there was a startup. There was a new $1 billion internet startup every day.
Every day.
And this was back when Wall Street was looking at the internet going, fuck, I bet there's a lot of money in that.
See?
And so all you had to do was be able to code up one shitty page, and the next thing you know, you're an internet millionaire.
That's it. It's like, wow, I sold 2 million units on a bullshit-ass web page that I spent, you know, $100 on. Now I have to figure out how to fill these orders. No, that was the way it was then.
I mean, I'm trying to remember some of the companies, but they, you know, they were ridiculous. And they just whoop, boom, and
AOL. Remember AOL?
Well, I mean, technically they're still there. I mean,
well,
shit, they own, you know, they own CNN.
And you know what? And I'm going to talk about. I'm going to ask you something about Anonymous. But you know something? I bet you can use it too. I still use WinAmp. I have preserved a copy. WinAmp is the shit. I don't know why people stop using.
You know what? WinAmp is what plays the rerun stream.
I knew it.
And I don't.
Utilitarian, like.
I don't know what I'm going to do when I have to do something else.
Listen, it's scaring me. I don't know what is people's problem. Man, WinAmp. Listen, you can do. There's amazing. You can have like 15 instances open. You can fade. You can do so much with WinAmp. Ugh. Then I have I got a lot of software that interfaces with WinAmp, and I got a new jazz station that comes through with 220 bits per second. But I'm not going to get into that. But listen, Anonymous has today. I was listening to a left-wing broadcast, so Anonymous is about to drop the bomb on Hillary, though. They have.
You believe that?
Yeah, all right. Now that you ask, this is what I believe. Now, I was born on this. And, the dog is smart. So, hey. Not this one. So listen, you know what? What if Anonymous, think about this. We're never going to have a clear president anymore, because ever since Echelon back in the 80s, probably, that was based in Belgium, it looked like a buckyball, you know, surveillance kind of thing. That was the prototype for what we have now. All right. So, then, you know, everything's being monitored, right? So how are we going to have a president who don't have any blackmail information on, period? So what if Anonymous, they're fronting as a, just out there and anarchist type organization, but they're really not. What if they're just an operative? say, and they can pick and choose where you want to bombshell.
Yeah.
That's a thought.
And look, you know, maybe that's where we wind up. Maybe there's so much money. I mean, look, I know that the Washington Post awarded 3 fucking Pinocchios to the statement that she takes bukus of money from the fossil fuel industry. But like I said before, Greenpeace.
What? Wait a minute. How could that be?
Well, I mean, the Washington Post is, you know, in the tank for
her. I understand they're right wing, but I mean, the facts, everybody, I mean, that's just common knowledge, really.
No, because, see, she only takes money from people who work for the fossil fuel industry, not from the industry itself. But, see, Greenpeace dug around and they found all the fossil fuel money going into the PACs. And so, you know, look, like I said, it was what our buddy Dr. John got today was breaking news. Bernie Sanders wants a moratorium on fracking in the entire United States.
I don't blame him.
I don't either. It's the right thing to do, but there is a hard ass conversation to be had with the rather facile statements that, bless his heart, because I respect him, Bill McKibben makes when he says we've got to get away from fossil fuels. We don't have to get away from fossil fuels 50 years from now or 100 years from now. We got to get away from fossil fuels yesterday. And that applies to me, and that applies to Todd, and that applies to everybody right in the Horn Family Community Congregation. And you know what? Getting away from fossil fuels is going to be goddamnably difficult. And it is going to require a lifestyle change on the part of every person in this country. Because see, when it comes to heating up the planet, we're doing more of it than anybody else, and we have done more of it than anybody else over the last 100 years. So those right wingers, those right wingers, say, "Well, we can't do nothing about it because I mean, what about China and India?"
Well, we have to lead by example for once, maybe. Huh.
Yeah, but the facts of what comes with that are so terrifying that even the people who say we have to get away from fossil fuels will not follow up by telling anybody what that means. And what that means is some terrifying shit. What are you going to give up? Okay,
it is,
but you know, you get Todd, you get the American people to pay this price. What would happen?
They're all fat and lazy, man. They can't walk 2 blocks to get a pack of cigarettes.
Look, the most successful history of this country is a history of this country when this country was mostly subsistence farming, and the same thing goes for humanity from the moment that we discovered agriculture. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
But you know, but from the first.
Thanks to beer, by the way.
Yeah, but from the first, planted crop to the atom bomb is not that long a period of time when you get right down to it in the broader scope of human history. But consider this, Todd. We're still getting 35% of America's electricity by burning coal.
Ooh.
Okay, the fact that it's down to 35% from 50% is because people are transitioning by people. Well, you know, corporations are people too, my friend, human beings. Corporations, power companies are transitioning away from coal-fired power plants to goddamn natural gas, frack gas. All right? Now, that frack gas comes with the extra burden of us not having any goddamned water to drink.
Well, that's my fault.
Okay,
see,
so
I wish you hadn't brought this up.
Well,
this is. I'm gonna tell you, I'm from Pennsylvania, where that shit is really got. I remember in science class in seventh grade, they could do that shit then. We're like, yeah, it's not cost effective. I'm gonna do it. But look, who the hell said? I mean, everybody dropped the ball on this. Who in the fucking right of mind would say, oh, it is okay to mix up these chemicals and put them into the ground on high pressure where we might drink from? We'll be drink from. We have no idea, you know, we're going to try to suck it all up. That is the most ridiculous. That shit on paper just looks fucked. If you were a student.
And yet consider this being.
If you were a student, you submitted that shit, you would fucking fail. They'd kick your ass out of school.
And yet, this being Moran Monday, let me call your attention to a United States Senate candidate from the state of Colorado, who declared in the wake of the USGS report that came out that said that fracking causes a hell of a lot more earthquakes. She responded by saying, "Fracking doesn't cause earthquakes; God causes earthquakes." Okay, so you're up against that mindset, all right? You're up against that mindset with if not a majority, a significant plurality of the American people. Now, we've got to get off fossil fuels, so that means we're going to eliminate the coal-fired and the gas-fired electricity. Okay, boom, you just lost 50% or more of the electricity production in the United States. Whose lights go out, Todd? Whose heat doesn't come on in the winter? Which old lady roasts to death in a July heat wave in Philly?
Listen, you know what? Right now, this is what I'm saying. The time is now. People need jobs. You know what you start doing? MIT has already come out. This was 10 years ago. They have an ink they can put in those, when you have those nice fake paned windows, there's an ink that goes in, that you can impregnate into those panes, and it absorbs electricity. All right. They have fabric that is turned into solar collectors. So what we need to do is just make the stuff. Build it, make it.
You're still gonna have to have the energy to make the stuff.
Well, you know what? It's not my fault that people waited. We should have been doing this in 19. Remember?
You're right. I mean, I'm not being mean. I mean, we had great conversations.
No, this is about discourse. Exactly. This is about discourse. Correct. Yep. I'm with you.
There are some immediate answers, but even they are fraught with problems. The most immediate answer for single family dwellings or, you know, condos or something like that is to have enough in the way of a solar array. To provide basic electrical needs, but you're not going to push any 240 volt or 440 for that matter. What is that? 480.
The evil of mankind is in the way, Bob.
Electric furnaces and central air conditioners. You're not going to do that.
The evil of mankind is in the way, and I say this because for like the third time in a few days, I've been listening to a few Michio Kaku presentations. So, and, you know, like Elon, guy, you can take his technology, anybody can do it now for battery storage. Okay, that's a big deal. That's a really big deal. So, people need to follow suit. People are just greedy. That's what I'm saying. It's just greedy. It's something in the way. You know,
yeah,
people are in the way.
But Todd, it's not greed when Granny doesn't want to die of heat stroke in July in an apartment in Chicago. That's not greed.
Oh, that's terrible. Well, yeah. All right, I get your point. We're in a fix.
We are in a hell of a lot worse fix than even people like Bernie Sanders are talking about. And I'm not sitting here proposing we have some sort of lottery to see who lives and who dies.
No, Logan's run over here. No.
But the cost the cost of inaction is to make all of us take a number in that lottery. And those are going to be brutal deaths. I mean, so we learned I'm not running around with my hair on fire, except for the fact that I probably am. That science, that climate modeling computer model report about the West Antarctic ice sheet.
Yeah,
remember it was going to be 200-400 years before the sea level rose 3 feet globally. So we were going to have 200-300 years to not do any fucking thing about all these cities that we built on low ground on coastlines because we're humans and make terrible mistakes.
That became slightly truncated, didn't it?
Huh?
That became slightly truncated.
Really truncated. Okay, by 2100, we're now talking about a possible 6 to 8 foot sea level rise globally. Goodbye, Sydney. Goodbye, Boston. Goodbye, New York. Goodbye, Philly. Goodbye, Mobile. Goodbye, New Orleans. Goodbye, San Diego. And that's without saying goodbye, Mumbai. Goodbye, Cape Town. Goodbye, Tokyo.
All of South Asian places that are like
goodbye, entirety of Bangladesh. And then what happened? And of course, all of the cities of the world are goodbye, London. Goodbye, Amsterdam. And all of the cities of the world are where all the wealth is accumulated. And so if that happens. You're talking about Chinese atonal music.
Well, Bob, see, there's a reason that the wealthy people for the past like 25 years have been grabbing, they've been cheating on the stock market, grabbing as much wealth as they can because they knew that space was being privatized, and the people who couldn't get the space, what they were doing is buying places like Mr. Justice bought, because remember, there's like a underground vault.
Bunker.
You know, there's a cavern down there in Greenbrier where you can, you know, it was made for the people from D.C., if I remember right.
Well, yeah, it was, and for a while it was opened up as a tourist attraction until 9/11, and now it's back to being a place where we can take the people who deserve to survive. I mean, God knows, I love me a beach trip. I mean, I have to be dipped by the heel in SPF 9000 every morning. But I love me a trip to the beach. But I don't want my trip to the... I mean, I guess it would be more convenient, but I don't want my trip to the beach to be the equivalent of me driving to Richmond. Oh, goodbye, Richmond.
Well...
I mean, goodbye, South Carolina.
Oh,
I mean,
hell yeah.
Look what a couple of days of heavy-ass rain did last fall.
What? Oh, you have no idea. Oh, the Zika. Oh, by the way, the Zika's on the move, man. Oh, my God. Anyway,
so,
I don't even know what time it is.
It's 22. It's 22 before the hour. But, you know, we started off one place and we wound up in another. But that's okay because that's what these conversations are supposed to be, Todd. But
yeah.
I think we would do damned well to have that because, honest to God, I mean, I hear a politician, what's his name? Former governor from Maryland, was running as a Democrat for a while and nobody would pay attention. And he was just saying,
the guy who was a Republican, yeah, he looked like
not Webb. I'm talking about the guy, the reasonable one from Maryland. The guy who said,
Webb was,
the guy who said, I want us to be, he said, I have a plan for us to be running on completely sustainable energy by 2050.
Oh, well, that's why you don't hear about him. He got drummed out.
And I thought, you know, that's a great idea, but it may not be. I mean, we're talking about Berlin airlift kind of stuff, where every resource has to be devoted to solving this problem.
But see, Bob, that's why I was trying to, I was being kind of rude. I kept trying to cut you off about 8 minutes ago, maybe, I don't know. But see, this is the thing. Our electrical infrastructure is so messed up right now. This is the time just to start over and do what's needed now in small, localized, power stations, right? It's time. I mean, why continue to build on an obsolete model?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we got to make some decisions, but that's why we have to start local. So,
I mean, I just had a note here from Charlie in Tennessee, who says, "Bob, I'm surprised that you're finally exposing the shit fix that we're really in regarding energy production." Well, I mean, I've known it all along, but I kind of kept hoping that I was going to read something by one of the smart people somewhere, who was going to say, "Well, you know, it doesn't have to be the." Mad Max horrorscape that you think it is, Bob. But it looks like
see, Bob, the people on the other side of you, not on the other side, but on the realistic side, let's say, but maybe opposite, they say, okay, this is why we have to have the new nuclear, because there's no bridge right now. We've waited too long. New nuclear, not the.
No, that's why the gas industry tried to buy off the Sierra Club a few years back by getting them to say frack gas is the bridge fuel. There's no, if it's a fossil fuel, it's not a bridge fuel. And yeah, I get the nuclear argument. And it just
I don't like it.
It gags my gut to say that that's an answer, because you know, that's just another Fukushima waiting to happen. And by the way, where are we going to build the nuke plants now that we've fracked the fuck out of the United States? And anywhere, even places that didn't used to have earthquakes now. Where are we going to stick that reactor, Todd? And I'm not yelling at you. You know that.
No. I'm shaking my head because it's like, why would you even sign off on that? I just can't get over it. I just really can't get over it. Between the not being able to drink the water and the earthquakes right there, seem like, you know what, this is not a good idea. Let's just stop this right now. Let's stop. Well, Cuomo did that, right? New York, no more fracking.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, Bob Kincaid is on point. Bob Kincaid is taking care of business. And everybody who loves Bob Kincaid, please tell other people about Bob Kincaid.
Todd, I thank you, but I don't think this is going to be a welcome message. You know what I mean?
And I feel sorry about you when you told the truth about some things in the Middle East, you know, because this is what we need right now is truth.
Well, you know? And it's the last damn thing a whole lot of people want. I mean, we like our myths. I mean, and suddenly we're back to Kunta Kinte again. We like our myths. We like our personal myths. You know, we're gonna move boldly into a renewable, sustainable energy future, and we're just gonna transition away from what we're doing now. And no, and it's just gonna be like flipping a switch, and nobody's gonna know the difference. Horse shit.
Do you remember Waterworld, Kevin Costner?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. For some reason, that movie got terrible reviews, and guess what? He was right.
There's an element of it that I don't know if there's enough water on the planet to submerge every last bit of dry land.
Did it go that far? Okay,
but well, it, I mean, there's a Look, I mean, there are modeled maps out there that tell us what this planet is going to look like once we get done melting the ice caps, okay? Little things that we can notice in just the short span of time of a few years. Google Earth.
Well, Miami, I just got back from Florida. Let me tell you something. I wasn't in Miami, but I was in Florida, and even where I was, and I've been going there since since a little kid. Florida's done, man. The water's coming up into the sewer. you know, it's at high tide. It's not even during the storm.
No, I mean, our buddy Jay Cruz, who lives down there and works in the and works on power lines and shit down there, he knows. He knows what happens when it fucking rains. Okay, but you know the maps that show us what. Well, what I was saying, Google Earth. I can remember when Google Earth had a frozen North Pole. When you would, you know,
remember how big it was?
When you would rotate to the North Pole, and you go, "Oh, look, it's a North Pole because it's covered. It's got an, you know, we've got a North Polar ice cap." Open up Google Earth now. There's no ice cap. I mean, I read some story the other day that now there's going to be some sort of fucking one percenter cruise that you can take, you know, from the Atlantic to the Pacific through the polar ocean. That's there now because it isn't frozen. And you know, the kind of people that give Google God blessed oodles of money to politicians will go, I mean, you know, maybe we can buy a free ticket for Jim Inhofe. Well, the climate's always been a changing, but I made a snowball in Washington, D.C. last year.
These people.
I mean, we're.
You know what? Since you brought up food, anybody who's listening, yo, you have to make pancakes from scratch and let it, with a little bit of yeast, let it sit out. Let it get a little bit funky.
Oh, no. Make the sourdough. Make the sourdough.
Oh, that was so good. Oh.
Sourdough pancakes are the best smelling thing I've ever heard smell come out of a kitchen.
I'm telling you, I've been treating people left and right. They love it. It's a hit.
You're down in a place that values its food. You be careful. You're gonna wind up with a business.
That wouldn't hurt. Take care, Bob.
All right, you be good, Todd. Man, what a great conversation. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye now. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. And thank you very kindly to Colin in Illinois. Thank you very, very much for jumping in alongside Kim. We have $240 to go. $240 to go for fundraising for the evening. And it would be nice if we could take a bigger bite out of it so that we don't have a big hole for Titanic Tuesday. Thank you very much in advance and retroactively as well. I mean, there are future there are future alternatives. But they're not fully developed, and we can't wait around until they're deployable. There very few are the now. I think there are a lot more people who understand the urgency that attends this, but damned few people who want to talk about the realities of it. How do you provide solar energy to a massive high-rise apartment complex in New York City, or Chicago, or even a not-so-massive? I mean, the possibility presents itself in the case of a single-family dwelling, because if you've got an appropriate orientation to the building, you might have enough roof space to provide all of your lights. But you're not going to run a central air conditioning unit or a central furnace. I don't think. You know, maybe geothermal's a part of it, but somehow or another, along the way, you have to make that necessary, or a necessity, or even compulsory, because we've reached a point where we can't burn the filth anymore. Let's run over to Wisconsin and see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Good evening.
Good evening, Flavio.
Feeling much better. I've been through some weird contretemps.
That was my understanding. I hope you are better.
No, it's bodily contretemps and apartment contretemps. The plumbing was finally fixed on my sink. I can do my dishes now.
That's,
isn't that great?
That's a lovely idea.
Oh my God, it's awesome. Yeah, the sink was gurgling. It was something out of a horror movie. Yeah, exactly. And then I took the plunger to it, and I thought the PVC had burst or something because the water was like coming from under the cupboard beneath the sink. And I was thinking, oh my Lord, what have I done? I've created a monster. Yeah, because I was tracking water all over the apartment and thinking, where is this coming from? And they found out that it was a fixture in one of the pipes that had rusted. And they were right
there,
on
there,
it.
There's some more of that crumbling infrastructure.
Yeah, I know. This building is, I think, from 1910. The building I live
oh,
in.
You probably got some lead somewhere along the way, Flavio.
Oh, yeah, but I was stupid to begin with, so it only enhances. It's only, it doesn't change anything. But I wanted to play devil's advocate, and I wanted to tell a little quick anecdote from when I was. And again, I want you to demolish me, by the way, because, again, I'm playing the devil's advocate, and so you have to absolutely, implacably demolish me.
I don't know if I can. I mean, you know, the devil deals the cards.
Okay, here goes. I went back to school. I had a graduate and an undergraduate degree already, and I thought, hey, I think I'll go and teach high school in Wisconsin. This was before Walker. And I went through the rigmarole, enrolled in a course, got all A's in the education courses, passed the praxis, that's the teacher examination that they give, you know. And
yeah.
It's really a stupid test that they give you to know if you know your arithmetic and you know, you don't have two heads and 15 fingers or something. And I took the Spanish test because I wanted to specialize in teaching Spanish to K through 12. Kindergarten through 12th grade.
Right.
I just want to clarify because, you know, jargon is meaningless. So anyway, so I went through it all and everything. And then, you know how you have, when you're a budding teacher, they assign you to a veteran teacher, and I was assigned to this veteran teacher in a local middle school, which shall remain unnamed, and I got this woman, this rotund redhead, married to a Latin American who had extensively traveled throughout South America, whose Spanish sucked something fierce. So anyway, the very first day when she was showing me around the middle school, we alighted upon the teacher's lounge. And she said, oh, and when you're on your break, you can relax and listen to Rush Limbaugh's.
Oh, Jesus.
I had
to. Is that when you figured out teaching was not for you?
I had to do everything. I had to muster everything in my power not to bite all the way through my tongue and make it bleed. because what I wanted to say, can I bring some alcohol and OxyContin so like I can feel like I'm there? And this was a member of WEAC, the Wisconsin Education Association Council, the friggin'
union.
Wisconsin Teachers Union.
Okay? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I'm an anarcho-syndicalist. I am, okay, you want a reference? Peter Kropotkin, okay? That's me. That's
okay.
Me to a T. Okay?
Okay.
Mutual aid, solidarity. And I live in France. And one of the things I loved about France is when the teachers went on strike, the students went on strike, the nurses went on strike, the doctors went on strike, the plumbers went on strike, the firefighters went on strike. They shut that bitch down. Okay?
Okay.
And at the time, my night watchman, mon veilleur de nuit, Michel, a very amiable guy otherwise, commented, oh, they're just bitching because they spent their money over vacation. And he had taken me down to his wine cellar and had me taste this muscadet that was to die for from like 1930s or something. But he was a fucking fascist.
And a member of a union as well. I love this, Flavio, but we got like 3 minutes.
Okay, got it. So how do you explain that phenomenon in 3 minutes? I'm done talking. That members of a friggin' union are anti-union.
I mean, okay. The short and easy is a want of proper education of the rank and file.
But are they not to blame, the rank and file? Are they not to blame for resting on their laurels and their privilege?
Well, yeah, somebody's not educating. I mean, I was told a long time ago when we were getting the initial lines running here for the studio. A good member of communications workers, who happened to be a good liberal, said, "You have no idea on any given morning in the yard how many trucks of union members will have their radios tuned to Rush Limbaugh."
Limp balls.
Okay. And part of that is because no one was, and you know this would take the rest of the night. That's because our side doesn't fund any sort of fighting back. You know, that's why, you know, we came into the program with $300 to raise, and we got 240 more. We got 240 to raise to keep from being 440 in the hole tomorrow, because liberals, liberal organizations,
they don't play smash mouth football.
Well, no, they don't play football at all. The right wing's out there playing smash mouth football, and our side walks out and it's fucking croquet whites, okay, without the mallets even.
Yeah,
that's why. I mean, that's overly simplistic, but that's why.
Yeah, it's a thumbnail, but it'll do.
Yeah. So I got to get out of here, Flavio. I wish we'd had more time to devote to this.
Oh, I'll call again. I just came back. I'm better.
And I'm glad you are.
Think of the Peter Gabriel song.
All right. You take care.
I love you, man.
All right.
Good
love
night.
You too, man. Bye. Flavio calling from lovely Wisconsin. And it is. It's time to get out of here. Sure, and nice to be back into the swing of things. And I think we will just have to transfer some stuff over from Moran Monday to Titanic Tuesday because, you know, it fits. Thanks to all of you who make this little Horn Family Community Congregation what it is, who keep it going, who participate, share your ideas, your conversations, your hopes, your dreams, your frustrations. Thank you. Because that's what makes this a viable little community. Thank you indeed.
Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And, yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. See y'all over at Malloy's place.